D3. Number 3A.
Well, this morning we have established in consciousness the fact that reality can be understood through those great seven synonymous terms which Mrs. Eddy gives for God: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And therefore she capitalized those terms because they mean something different than just the ordinary language attributes to these terms. And in the same way, we have seen, second, that these seven synonymous terms operate in a fourfold way, namely as Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. That these seven synonymous terms take on a different office the moment they are considered either in the Word, or in the Christ, or in Christianity, or in Science. They always remain the same synonymous terms, because they all refer to the one being. Insofar, they always are interchangeable, and therefore remain always the same synonymous terms, but in the measure as we use them and see them, how they operate, different characteristics of each of these synonymous terms is stressed. You see, it's something like this. Say, we have the number 555. Well, this number 555 is composed of but one numeral, namely 5. 5 is a numeral. And according to the place where that numeral appears, it has a different value. The last 5 of 555 has just the value of 5, the middle one the value of 50, the first one the value of 500, but the numeral remains the same. So, in the same way, by the way, the mathematician calls the place in which that numeral appears and which gives to that numeral really the value, calls it the place value. And so in the same way we could see that those seven synonymous terms would be those big numerals symbolizing infinity, but in the according to the place and the office in which they appear, they have a different shading, a different accentuation, a different place value, if we may take that term from arithmetic. So that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love have different meanings or accentuate different characteristics. If they are used in consciousness in the method of the Word, or if they are used in the Christ, or if they are used in Christianity, or in Science. So that there is a great differentiation or accentuation which takes place the moment we consider these seven synonymous terms in their operational breadth. Because Word, Christ, Christianity is an operational breadth, an operational expression of the Word, and gives to that Word a dynamic sense. So we have in a short way indicated this category of the four sides of the Holy City. Now I come to the next category which you have on this chart, namely the one we have on the left-hand side as the vertical, where we have the terms science, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. These terms give us, so to say, an operational depth of being, whereas Word, Christ, Christianity, and science give a sense of breadth, of operational, extensional breadth, Those four terms of science, I call them the levels of science, or stages, states and stages of science. Let's call them, for convenience sake, the levels of science, are showing us the depths in being. The one being considered how it operates on different levels of consciousness, but always within the one consciousness. Now, let's first state this, that if one reads Mrs. Eddy's textbook, one can't help seeing that she uses the term science in various ways. She speaks about science, just science. And that is the way she uses it most. Then she would speak about divine science. Then she would speak about absolute Christian science, or just about Christian science. Now, these are not just literally nice variations, you know, just to change a little bit the style of it and just use another word instead of the one, and so as not to repeat oneself and so on. This isn't the case. She had in her consciousness a very distinct sense of these levels of consciousness. And if one studies carefully those terms, one can't help perceive that they indicate four altitudes of consciousness. It's very difficult to say, you know, to express it, because it's all in the one being, and to say altitudes is already indicating that there is something higher or lower, but in the one being nothing is high and low, really. But for our human comprehension, we just have to use this symbolization of higher and lower. So we could see that the highest sense of science, and when she speaks about that, she just would use science. Then, the moment she would try to show the divine nature of this one science, therefore already reaching down to the human sense of understanding and giving to the human concept of being the divine concept of being, then she would speak about divine science. And we can see that it is already some sort of coming down to meet the human understanding. Then, from there, you can see that this divine science must have a relationship with the human understanding, with human consciousness, with that relative sense, and must give to the relative sense a higher concept. And so we come to absolute Christian science, giving the answer to all our relative thinking, to all our relative approach to being, and giving the absolute sense of science. And so she calls it absolute Christian science. But even we can see that more questions have to be answered, that the greater depth has to be found, namely an answer to all those questions: how does then science or truth relate to its opposite, to error, to matter, to evil? And the moment these questions are under consideration, where it has to be shown which laws rule, when it has to be seen how truth operates on the belief of error, level of mortal mind, of material consciousness and mortal consciousness, the moment error is confronted with its opposite, then we have Christian science. So, can you see how within those four levels we have a complete reach into the depths of being, starting right from the top, from the highest sense of science which is concerned only with principle's own knowledge of itself, principle's own operation of itself, right down to the point where the question is answered, how does truth operate on the belief of matter, of evil, of sickness, sin, death, etc. So within the one, we have these four stages which answer very different questions. And to see that these are the categories of being is most important, because you know from the opportunities each one has had in one's experience in Christian Science, that in those experiences you will discuss things on Christian Science with other people and somehow not agree with the other fellow. Because one would say there is only one and therefore there is no evil, which is quite true, and the other will say, but you have to handle evil. And so the first comes and says, you can't handle evil because there is no evil, so there is no necessary to handle evil. The other one comes and says, no, we have to handle evil. And who is right? Both are right. Both are right. Because the one speaks from the level of science itself, and the other is speaking from the level of Christian Science. So we have to see that there is not just one big question which one has to ask, but there are four levels of questions which reach from the most supreme point right down to meeting all the human arguments, the relative arguments, and the arguments of error. Science itself, if we would consider science itself, has no question of evil. Just doesn't. A principle in any science is not at all taking into account any question of error. A principle just does not know what one is talking about if one says there is an error. Just hasn't had any concept. So science itself really has no concept of error. But because the human problem has to be solved, therefore there must be a reduction of this infinite one to the point where it can touch every question of the human mind, which is answered by divine science, and therefore must answer all our misunderstanding, which is answered by absolute Christian science, and must answer all the questions of error, which is the level of Christian science. So one has, you can see and feel, and I will go over them a bit more closely, and you will feel that herein lies, so to say, the answer to all those misunderstandings which come up in discussing the big subject of science. Another point which I just want to touch, so as to give a sense why we should also consider these four levels. Because apparently Mrs. Eddy doesn't speak about them expressly. She only speaks about it through the whole textbook. The whole textbook really is constantly a wonderful symphony where these levels melt into one another, combine with one another, lead into one another. And if I would have time, I could give you whole paragraphs from the textbook where she starts with science and then goes on to the level of divine science and to absolute Christian science and to Christian science. Just full of it. And the moment one sees these, then all those apparent controversies or those apparent inconsistencies which most students at the beginning find in the textbook, they all resolve. Because the moment we classify a question rightly, then we can see that each problem finds a different answer according to the standpoint or to the level from which one is discussing or reasoning. I will show you that. But the first point, or the point I would make, is these four levels. You know, we have seen, Mrs. Eddy states, that really the acme of Bible revelation is that holy Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven, and is in the Bible represented differently than what Mrs. Eddy interprets. Mrs. Eddy interprets that holy city as lying four square, as having four equal sides. See, it has a square, four equal sides. This is usually the symbol of a system. Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. There's four equal sides. But the Bible tells that story a bit different, because the Bible says that that new Jerusalem that came down from heaven, that the length and breadth and height was equal. The Bible speaks about the height being equal, having also four phases, four factors, and not only four sides. The new Jerusalem was shown as a cube, therefore, so to say, as a structure, and not just as a square, a city four square. Now, I don't know why Mrs. Eddy felt that she shouldn't interpret also the height of it. I don't know. Whenever I don't know something, I leave it, and I'm not going to worry about it. I just wait, and one day, out of the blue, it will be revealed. So don't ask me, I don't know. The only thing I know, that it is in the textbook, that the whole textbook itself speaks about those four levels, and therefore brings us to something which is really breaking through today, namely, that everything today is regarded no more as a system, but as structure. If I would have time, I could tell you about matter being regarded no more as something, but always as structure. I could tell you from all sides of art and so on that the foremost point is now structure. Mathematics, new mathematics, which is now taught at various places, is no more showing the numeration table, no more the system of mathematics. It is now taught as structure. Mathematics or arithmetic is today no more taught as arithmetic, it's taught as mathematics. Something completely new. So that when the kid is in the second and third form come home, the parents can no more do their homework. They don't understand the slightest anymore. And this is quite indicative of what's going on today in the world. That today we are no more going to understand something in a linear way, on a horizontal way. Word, Christ, Christianity, and science just forming a system. But today everything is built on structure, which is system upon system upon system upon system. This makes structure. And the moment one begins to see any subject as structure, you are allowed to forget all details, and you don't have to learn any details anymore. You only have to learn the structure, and then from that point we can calculate any point within the whole. And that's what Mrs. Eddy saw. Here, really, this chart is not a true representation of it, because this is on a sheet. Actually, those four horizontals are four square, like this, you see. Actually, those four are really like this. And finally, they form, instead of a cube, finally they will form a sphere. And that is indicated in the Bible too. Because when the Bible was showing that that holy city is not only four square, but is a cube, length, breadth, and height equal, then that is shown from the point of view of a sphere. Because right before, when that revelation comes in, the revelation said, now I'm going to show you what's going to come, and shows and opened the books, and another book, the book of life, of which it was said, it has no beginning and no end. It's Alpha and Omega. It's the first and the last. And only the sphere is a representation of bringing the cube into one consistent, self-organizing, self-operating whole. And up in Boston, in that class, I went on to that point, to show that today structure is really leading on to the concept of divine cybernetics, of the one being self-organizing itself, self-regulating itself, self-exposing error and self-correcting error. And these are the four levels. They are the four offices. So this is just to indicate what we are thinking. And so I go now back to explain a little bit closer those four levels, so that if we have those four levels, we can understand better the place value of each of the synonymous terms. Those four levels, as I have it on this chart, has on the top the level of science itself, pure science, pure science. Science which has no divine touch, which has no Christian touch, but which really is science as science. Science in its purest form. Science in its purest form says, really, I am the infinite principle, and this infinite is the one and only. It gives us the sense that the highest level of consciousness we can reach really is that where we begin to take into consciousness the concept that there is an infinite one, and that that infinite one is the only and the all, and there is nothing beside itself. So it is that highest consciousness which we can have, which sees the infinite one as an indivisible, infinite structure of being, where everything is turned into one and takes part of the one. Really, it is that where God is seen to be his own being. That's the level of consciousness, where consciousness is not interested in anything else but in contemplating what God is as his own infinite being, where all other questions are absolutely unknown. Questions about evil, about matter, about this and about that, about specific truth, a specific error, all that is just not taken into consideration when thought has arrived at that stage where we are just trying to see what God is as himself, how God looks at himself, where God is his own infinite being, where principle is his own infinite principle. And it is, I come back to this, it is a quite terrific concept of being. The Bible would have called that stage the I Am, the great I Am, where there is no differentiation and classification of any sort and shape, but where the I Am is just conscious of the I Am. So there where Moses began to see something of that nature and ask, what is thy name? And just God answered, I Am. The original Hebrew text reads a bit different. It says something, it's very difficult apparently to interpret it or to translate it, because it lends itself to many interpretations, but it more or less says, I am that what I am. That's what he asks. You see, I am knowing itself as the I am. That's the highest level of consciousness. That naturally includes all that is real and that is eternal. It is therefore that standpoint where the I am or the principle is conscious of itself as principle and doesn't ask what are ideas, what are illusions, what are specific truths, how can I deal with specific ideas, how can I deal with specific errors and so on. Where it just takes in and says, I have everything the moment I begin to recognize the infinite one in its own being. The I am. The great I am. See, it's that point where no questions are asked. Terrific. My heart just goes out to see to that point where Christian scientists don't ask any more questions. Why? Because asking questions means I don't know. Or one wouldn't ask. Therefore it's going out from ignorance. From ignorance nothing can be deduced, which is right. Nothing. We cannot reason from ignorance to understanding. It's just not possible. Reasoning from cause to effect in the science of mind, we start with mind, not with asking questions. And naturally, the moment we see being and understand it through the seven synonymous terms, we are not asking questions. We think from mind, and from mind of mind hasn't any questions because mind is knowing mind. And therefore it's just reasoning and seeing and contemplating itself as what it is. That's what it is. And can you see that this is what's just coming around the corner, while the youth of today don't want to have any more personal authorities telling them what to think. They all have an innate feeling that we have the right of direct revelation, that one has access to being direct and that being is present, and that being reveals itself direct. That's only an indication of this new approach that is coming and will be coming in the next century or so, which shows that old consciousness which we have been culturing for 2,500 years in the scientific logic is somehow deficient. It is reasoning from ignorance to truth. Whereas the new consciousness is seeing that we are one with truth and that truth reveals itself and therefore is showing itself forth in a direct and spontaneous, in a sense of revelation to us. So here we have that sense of signs. I come back to it afterwards. So, naturally, we all know that somehow this high level of consciousness is a level of consciousness which may not always be very tangible and present with our consciousness. That so many buts and whys come up from the part of mortal mind and human mind and ignorance and so on, which somehow need to be answered. That from that high level of science itself, we give the answer to all the counter-arguments which mortal mind or the human mind puts forward. The very first one is divine science. Divine science which deals with the oneness of being. See, science itself shows the infinite one. Being knowing itself as being. Now, the moment we have to answer questions of what is going on within that infinite one, we come to the oneness within that infinite one. We come to that point where we see that each detail within the infinite one is one with the whole. The moment we perceive the infinite one as spirit, for instance, and spirit is indivisible, then each detail is not a part of the whole, but is the whole itself in a differentiated way. Because if we cannot separate, we can have no parts. We can have no parts. So that each manifestation of the infinite is always the infinite itself. Never a atom of the infinite. Never a little dust in the immensity of the infinite. Every little detail is always, is not an atom, a little tiny bit, but is always a individual representation of the one. And this is something to think out quietly and gently, and it's a wonderful thing to think of. Because you tried for some few evenings and sit down quiet and just think out that if one loses that human sense, because now comes in the divine sense, if we lose that human sense which always tries to think in parts, and parts means splitting up the whole, therefore that is limitation, that's matter. If the infinite cannot be split up, who can split up the infinite? Who can split up spirit? Nothing. It's not possible. Therefore, everything that happens within that oneness is always one with the infinite. So, in divine science, therefore, the contemplation is always that principle and its manifestation as idea is one. Here we have the coexistence of principle and idea. Here we have that the all, capitalized all, that the all is in all, small a. Can you see? In divine science, the consciousness is at that point very contemplates that the all, which is capitalized, is in all not capitalized, small a, where principle is manifesting itself as idea, but still remaining principle, where the all is not expressed as idea and is no more principle. It still remains principle. Terrific.